Hello and welcome to Circling the Bases, proudly presented by RotoWorld and NBC Sports. My name is DJ Short, and I'm back here once again with Eric Samolsky. Today we also have a special guest, Paul Sporer from FanGraphs and the Sleeper and the Bus podcast, one of the best fantasy baseball podcasts out there. Paul, thanks for coming on the show today. Really good to have you here.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I don't think you've ever been on the show before. I don't think we've ever been on a podcast together, Paul, which is kind of crazy.
That is very crazy, all things considered.
Because we've both been in the industry for over 10 years, I'd say, at this point.
Yeah, it's been a while. So that is, I wonder if we ever ended up on a panel together at some point. I just feel like... Yeah. I feel like we had to have been in something together. We've been in each other's orbits for quite some time.
Yeah.
We're making history.
That's right. And that, hey, I'm happy that this is the first, if it is. I don't remember everything, but I think it actually is. But it's good to be on. I've talked with Eric before, and when he invited me on, couldn't pass up an opportunity to talk to you guys.
Awesome. I remember one time, I think I met you, Paul. Eno did a meetup in New York City.
Yep.
I can't remember what bar it was, but it was like everybody from like the fantasy baseball and like baseball Twitter space, like all in one venue.
It was pretty great.
It was awesome. It was very
great. I do remember that as well. I also don't remember the bar, but I do remember the event, and it was a lot of fun.
It's sometimes staggering how tall Paul is in person, because you know he talks about it all the time, and then you're like, oh, yeah. No, he really is that tall.
He didn't lie about that. Yeah. No.
And then he comes in wearing like super bright, like neon colors just to make him seem.
You cannot miss him.
You cannot miss me. I am like the wavy inflatable man in front of a used car lot. That's me.
So we're truly in the home stretch here in the fantasy baseball season anyway. September right around the corner. So this episode we'll be focused on fantasy surprises from the 2023 MLB season. Some names who have exceeded preseason expectations. We'll talk about how they got there this season and how we should start to think about them in fantasy leagues for 2024. Before we do that, RotoWorld Football Draft Week is officially here. All week long, we've got drafts, articles, and more from your favorite RotoWorld talent and special guests as well. Get all you need to dominate your upcoming fantasy drafts. Go to nbcsports.com/fantasy to see the schedule of all that's happening this week. You can use the code CHAMP23 to save 20% at checkout and get a $10 Fanatics gift card as well. Make sure to get your RotoWorld fantasy football draft guide if you're drafting this week. Lots of good stuff we're adding to the draft guide this week, but we're here to talk baseball. I'm going to let you guys kick it off with your first surprise. But before we do that, I did want to mention quick headline coming out of the weekend. Felix Bautista has a UCL injury, left the game on Friday with that injury. I think he was just like one strike from finishing that game out. Kind of looked innocuous at first. Wasn't really sure what was happening there. Does turn out to be a UCL injury. Of course, anytime you hear that, you're like, either Tommy John surgery or a lengthy rest and rehab. So you have to expect that Bautista is out for the rest of this season, hopefully not all 2024. I don't know if there's a lot of actionable fantasy advice to give here because Yennier Cano is basically rostered in three quarters of Yahoo leagues, for example. Mm-hmm. But again, that shortens that bullpen a little bit. I know they did call up DL Hall, but I guess short-term fantasy and then long-term for the Orioles as they look ahead to a playoff run. Paul, what does this mean for that bullpen?
I think it might cut into some win probability for some of those guys that we've been running out there, you know, namely a Kyle Bradish, who I really like. You know, Cano should be able to fill in pretty admirably. He doesn't miss bats at anywhere near the clip that Bautista does. In fact, I think it's a 50% rate, which speaks more of Bautista than it does against Cano. He's just under 1K per strike per inning for Cano. But Bautista, crazy, 110 strikeouts in 61 innings. He was excellent this year. So Cano should fill in the ninth nicely, but the problem is, of course, is that bridge. It becomes a little bit shakier. They also sent out Michael Bauman, who that was a little bit surprising. I know he's got an ugly walk rate, which you know is a problem at 12%, but I was surprised that he was sent out. DL Hall was called up. He could be – he's kind of a game changer, right? Because if he can spike hot for a month and a half here, then they'll barely miss Bautista. But that's a big if, and that's a big ask for him. So I do think it cuts in a little bit of the win probability for your Grayson Rodriguez's, your Kyle Bradish's, and then when you're streaming your Kramers, Gibson's, and Irvin's, which they've all had some streamer viability this year. So I think that's the biggest hit is a little bit of win probability because the bullpen, the bridge to Cano is shakier.
Yeah, I think it also just adds a little bit if you're in like a keeper league situation where Yennier Cano, there's a chance that he may actually be the closer in 2024 if the Bautista injury goes the way of Tommy John, which again, as of right now, we don't know that. But there's a possibility while there's all these question marks, if you're in a situation where you can get Cano thinking that he might be the closer for 2024, also depending on a league, if you're in a keep seven, keep eight, nine, whatever type of situation where the person who has Cano or, you know, where you can pick him up on the wire if you're in one of those 25% of leagues where he's available, where that's just added value. But again, like you mentioned, DJ, most places he's on a roster, most leagues trade deadlines passed. So there's not a lot to do here other than just understand the consequences.
Yeah, I was at Camden Yards last Tuesday night, and I did get to see the Felix Bautista entrance with all the lights and stuff. It was a pretty cool show, and I remember talking to my brother about the Orioles and the prospect of a postseason run for them. And at the time, we're like, oh, you know, Cano, Bautista at the end of games, like we may see a lot of like four inning starts from some of their starting pitchers as they go to their strength and their bullpen. Definitely going to look a lot different if they don't have Bautista at their disposal.
Yep.
For sure. Another kind of lower profile closer change here. David Robertson, who of course the Marlins acquired from the Mets at the trade deadline. He's really struggled since the trade. He's been removed as of Sunday from the closer role. It's kind of wide open in that no official placement's been named, but Tanner Scott has been the best pitcher out of that bullpen for the Marlins. And he's still out there in quite a bit of leagues. And you know, if he still is, he's someone who should be scooped up right away.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that, and when for me, if Craig Mish says it, I'm in. And like he's the Marlins guy. He's basically he's a beat writer for them, but he's basically their GM as far as I'm concerned. Because once he says it, it's good to go. And he's with Scott, and that's where the fantasy community went. That's where I would have been too. I've been blessed that I haven't really had to chase saves in like the main event or anything, so I wasn't in on them. But I'm good with it.
Don't you wish that was the case for all teams? Where like,
oh yeah,
there are a lot of great beat writers out there, and I follow a lot of them, and there's a lot of really good actionable info. But when it comes to the Marlins, you know exactly where to go, and you know that like 98% of the time it is verifiable fact and actionable fact, and it's just like it is a blessing. Craig is great at what he does.
Mish also gets quite a bit of Cardinals scoops too over the years, so stay tuned for that kind of stuff. So, yeah, he definitely is. Make sure you give him a follow if you haven't already. But let's jump into these surprises. And Paul, since you're our guest here, I'll let you kick off. And again, we're talking about players who have exceeded preseason ADP, preseason expectations, players who definitely jumped on the radar this year.
I mean, he was on the radar last year, but Adelis Garcia took another step this year, and I'll use this one as a hit against myself too, because I was pretty anti Adelis Garcia, pretty openly about it too. I'm not paying the premium, no thanks, hard pass, terrible plate skills as a 30-year-old. I still think it was sound reasoning. I don't say that just to cope for the wrong pick. But he added 4 points to his walk rate, too. He changed who he was, Adelis Garcia did, going from 6 to 10%. That's a big difference. In addition to the power that he's always kind of had, it's upped, jumped up a bit this year, 32 homers. He hasn't run. That said, I'm not going to try to use that to weasel out of being wrong about Adelis Garcia, because while he does only have 8 steals, it has not precluded him from being the 11th player rated on the Razzball player rater this year, which is a huge jump of where he was being drafted, because he's had so many runs and ribbies that you haven't even missed the steals that you were expecting from Adelis Garcia, and you've probably been able to supplement them elsewhere around the league because there's been so many other stolen bases. So sure. I took a fat L on him. Here's the crazy thing, and you might think I'm really stupid and I just don't learn. I'm going to fade him again next year because he's going to be even more expensive. He's going to be a year older, and I don't fully buy that this plate skill change is legit. So maybe I'm just doubling down on being an idiot, but I'm still not going to buy him next year. But I was dead wrong this year. He's been a top 11 player overall. You got your money's worth and then some out of Adelis Garcia.
Right. I mean, I think the Rangers offense being as good as it is, too, is helping with those counting stats. So that's certainly huge. I took a look at his baseball or his FanGraphs page, you know, Baseball Savant, all that stuff. Certainly more selective in terms of how often he's swinging, but not necessarily with chasing. So I think you're right about Garcia. It's probably not someone I'm going to pay for next year. But yeah, I don't think anyone could have seen the walk rate raising to where it's been this year, where it's actually kind of tolerable. I think his OBP is what, like 325, something like that. And that's certainly, you know, serviceable for him.
Yeah. And I do think like Paul said, he's going to double down on it next year, but I think you need to understand of like what you trust in a profile and what you don't. And if there are things that if you've been playing the game for a while or studying the game for a while, and there are things that you think make it hard for a player to succeed, and somebody, you know, checks those boxes of having traits that you don't necessarily trust, I think it's okay to sometimes say, you know what, maybe I'm going to miss on this guy, but it's not a profile that I've found success with in the past. It's not a profile that I think is like sticky year to year. And so, you know, obviously if a player falls far enough in a draft, you'll take them, but you're not going to go out and get them. And that's kind of how I feel about one of the guys that caught me by surprise, which was Bryson Stott. Because for the longest time, you looked at like O-swing leaders, and it was Bryson Stott at the head of the list. And this guy was swinging out of the zone like an extraordinary amount of the time. He was a speed-centric player who didn't take walks. And you were just kind of like, how long can this guy keep chasing pitches out of the zone but keep making contact at this level and have a batting average that's, you know, 290 and above? And granted, he has made improvements to the O-swing as the year has gone on. He has kind of reined it back in, but he is always going to be a super aggressive hitter. And he's continued to prove that he makes an elite level of contact. And he's hitting 296 on the year with, you know, 24 stolen bases, 13 home runs in a good lineup. And yeah, a 6% walk rate from a guy that you're counting on to steal bases, generally speaking, is not something that, you know, that lines up. But I think he's, you know, he's proven that the profile works for him. He understands what he can make contact with. He understands what he can reach in the zone, out of the zone. And he's not somebody who thrives on like really high barrel rates. So it doesn't matter if he barrels the balls he hits. It matters if he gets on base, if he makes contact enough to like punch something into left field, and then he gets on base, and then he does his damage with his leg. So, you know, I think I'm maybe trusting this profile a little bit, but like Paul said with Garcia, next year Stott's going to likely be somebody that I waver on a lot in drafts as a middle infield option, thinking like, is that aggressiveness going to catch up with him?
It's always hard to buy the upswing on a guy too. You know, like even when you love him one year, the price goes way up that following year, you're like, well, do I jump in? You know, I did like Stott as you know, under the radar kind of breakout candidate. That's panned out, 13-24 with the homers and steals, 296 average. Does it hold though? And then where does his price go? So I do think it really depends on where Stott's price is next year as to whether I'll be in or out. But he has been really nice this year for people that drafted him. I feel like he's been a little bit under the radar in terms of getting his due for having such a nice season, Stott has.
Yeah, certainly with that category juice for sure. And we know the sprint speed is elite, so that speed is always going to be there. And I think the batting average will too. The strikeout rate is around 15%, and you love that right in the combination with the speed. One name I'm really fascinated to see next year, mostly because we don't know where he's going to be playing, that's Cody Bellinger. An amazing turnaround this season from where he was last year. He has the biggest spread between his batting average last season and this season among all players. Last year is 210, this year 321. It's kind of been a throwback. If you remember the MVP campaign, he really brought the strikeout rate down. So where last year it was 27.3%, this year it's 15%. Has the lowest swinging strike rate of his career, lowest strikeout rate of any season of his career. Just a dramatic turnaround. I think a big part of it is just being healthy, which he hasn't been for a number of years. And I think getting out of that situation in LA, you know, getting kind of new voices in his ear, I think is part of it as well. But he looks really back to that MVP level performer that we saw with the Dodgers, 20 home runs, 18 stolen bases, really filling up the categories here. I don't know if he's going to be a Cub next year, but what he's doing this year, it's not a fluky thing. It's more like he's gotten back to form.
I tend to agree with that. Eric, I don't know if you're going to jump in there, but nope. Bellinger, you know, he's been someone that people have been having fun trying to jump back on. But then after another tough year last year, the believer train definitely got thinner. He had some believers out there, but they weren't plentiful, and they were rewarded this year. 20-18, 3.21 average. It's nice to see Bellinger back. In fact, Belly and Yelly both jumping back this year after their big MVP battle. I love it. I like both those guys. They're easy to root for, and so it has been nice to see both of them really jump back.
Will they both be drafted next to each other next year like they always are, is the question.
Yeah, just at a higher level. I think so. Yeah, I think where Belly goes will play a role. But I do think they have a chance to be drafted very close to each other. When one goes, that's your signal to maybe jump on the other.
Yeah.
I think that the health point that you mentioned, DJ, is really important too, where I think sometimes we realize, we think, okay, he was injured this year. Now he has an off season. He'll come back healthy the next year. And we don't often realize that, especially something with like that, a shoulder for a hitter, right? If you are like, if you're changing your swing to adjust for a pain or an injury recovery, like, it has long-term ramifications where you can't just snap your fingers and fix the swing immediately like that, right? It's kind of the same thing where, like, you know, we talked about like the Yandy Diaz launch angle thing forever, where it's like, oh, if he just lifts. Well, for some people,
it's he lifts. All right.
Hell yeah. He lifts constantly.
He lifts a lot. Yeah.
He lifts everything but the ball.
But if you, it's like, it feels so easy to say, oh, if we just make this one minor adjustment. And for some hitters, it's like a small tweak that unlocks something. And for others, there's just so many different components of a swing that it sometimes takes a long time to adjust the swing back to where it was before. So if you really do believe, and this is a good lesson for, you know, for subsequent years too, if you really do believe it was only health that was getting in the way of somebody, like people who really believed Bellinger is incredibly talented, those early seasons were not a fluke, it was just injury, and we don't have any reason to believe that there's a new injury, sometimes you just got to keep the faith with that player, and maybe not at the same ADP, obviously, that you were drafting at him 2 years ago. Sure. But if you believe in the talent, then assume that sometimes it just takes time for that swing to work itself out and, you know, continue to kind of buy back in on these guys. I think it's a good lesson to learn going forward.
Well, if you remember when Bellinger was struggling, he was changing his mechanics and his swing like every few weeks. Like, how can you find a comfort zone when you're constantly doing that?
No, you really can't. And that was an issue there. He really wanted to fix it. He was just trying to throw anything that he could at the wall, and nothing was working for Bellinger. And maybe all along it was the injury piece, which you guys have hit on. And it's like, he's trying different things to work around the shoulder, and then finally it just feels good. And boom, here he is back at 27. And it just felt like an MVP can't evaporate like that. And as long as he ever got back to health, we could see him great again. And thankfully we have with Bellinger.
What kind of contract does he sign this offseason?
Like a 4-year type of thing at like a 480, maybe 100. I mean, this has been an amazing season. And if his medicals are beautiful and people are really just not worried about any sort of re-injury directly related to the previous injury, then maybe it is closer to 425. Yeah, I think it will be something in that 4-year range. I don't know if he gets that full 7-8 type deal that normally he might have been getting. For a guy who had a rookie of the year and MVP, you would normally think he's on that trajectory. Might not be quite that high as kind of a knockdown for some of the tough years, but it should be still pretty nice. Like, Chris Bryant is an interesting kind of analog here. He never struggled as much, though, and he signed his deal after a rebound year, right? After 2021, right. He signed that deal with Colorado. So I think that could be something that we could see there. It would be a lesser version of that, though, even at the high end, because Bryant never had the depths of struggle that Bellinger did. Yeah.
Though you have the added speed component of Bellinger, too. There's an athleticism plus that
he's a true center fielder.
Right. And it feels like maybe he ages more gracefully, right? Because he's a more athletic player. He can move to first when he gets, you know, too old to be playing in the outfield or whatever. And maybe there's that element which kind of bumps his value up a little bit more.
So Brandon Nimmo got 8 years, $162 million from the Mets. I mean, I love Brandon Nimmo. That's a lot. And Bellinger just turned 28 in July. Mm-hmm. So he's young. He's young for hitting the free agent market.
Absolutely. Sure. And that's the beauty is like when you come up this early, and I think we're going to start seeing more of it in the coming years. Well, actually, it depends because teams are signing guys too. But if they aren't getting these long deals, we are going to see more pre-33 free agents. And those are obviously the best ones that you can go for. So, yeah, it's been a great year for Bellinger. He's making himself a lot of money. If they make the playoffs, he has a big run there. Whether it should or not, that will add to the bottom line, even if it's a short sample of greatness in October.
I mean, this is prime, like, old George Steinbrenner Yankees, like, throw everything you've got at Bellinger. You know, they could – I know they have Bader in center field, but it's like, obviously
he's Bellinger a free agent soon, too, right?
Yeah, and Bellinger's an upgrade. That lineup needs a lefty bat. Bellinger in Yankee Stadium would be stupid, and they would never be outbid by anybody back in the day. Now, if you live in New York like I do and you talk to Yankee fans now, they'll tell you – that the organization is a mess and they don't want to pay for anybody and they're cheap and whatever. But I mean, I think going hard after Bellinger in the offseason is a prime, you know, old school evil empire Yankees move. Mm.
Yeah.
Like that.
Could totally see something like that. They're going to be active this offseason to try to fix everything.
Is Brian Cashman the one making the decisions?
That I do not know. Eric, you're in New York. What do you think? I'm sure the fans would say heck no, but what do you think?
I think he is. I mean, I think the fans are done with him and Boone, but I just feel like, you know, I don't see the organization.
Hal and company are not. Yeah. That's where I lean too, but we'll see.
Who do you got next, Paul?
I'm going to go another older guy here. I mean, Adelis is not that old compared to this guy, especially, but Justin Turner, man. This is an old reference for people, but there's these watches called Timex watches, and their big thing was takes a licking and keeps on ticking. And they would have like sumo wrestlers or like a hammer slam it or some crap. That's Justin Turner, man. Takes a licking and keeps on ticking. Now he works all the way down to the Timex comparison here because he always gets hurt too. And yet he always comes back and he's always great. And yeah, he had the spike 151 game season in 2021, which was excellent. What a boon for people that drafted him. But since 2017, he's only eclipsed 135 that one time. He's usually more of a 130, 125 type game guy. Even this year, 118 actually, that's pretty close to the max. Yep. He hasn't missed much time this year. And he's great yet again. I thought Justin Turner would still be good because he always is, but I thought it'd be good batting average where the power would take a hit. Nope. The power's still there. I thought he'd just beat the crap out of the Green Monster. No, he goes over it sometimes too. He's got 22 homers, 290 average. The dude just keeps getting, he's 38 years old. And we are so ageist in fantasy, which by the way, is well-reasoned, right? I make that joke a lot about the ageism in fantasy. It is based on a lot of things that make you do that. Like you should be ageist because guys that are older usually fade, but there are exceptions. And Justin Turner is absolutely one of those exceptions that just doesn't seem to fade. And I don't know that I would want to draft him next year because then he'll be 39, but he'll be coming up another great year. So shouts to Justin Turner, man. Just a beautiful season, even threw in four steals for you out of nowhere.
75 starts out of the DH spot. I mean, I think that's the key to keeping him on the field. Just keep
absolutely
him. That DH spot is a godsend for him.
Even totally though he's agree. Also played in 10 games at second base too, which is going to pick up some eligibility for people elsewhere
too. That would be huge. Yeah,
but I think to Paul's point, it's looking at the age, but it's also looking at the profile of the player, right? Mm-hmm. So like Justin Turner is a player who, based on everything he does well, should age better than somebody who, you know, whose main component is speed or athleticism or whatever. Yeah. Justin Turner was always a high batting average guy who will hit for power, but he's not a 40 homer guy. So if he dropped down to 25 home runs, you're not drastically changing his fantasy value. So a guy who's going to be a 25-ish home run hitter with a 280 batting average and not a lot of speed is a guy who can age more gracefully because that profile can continue to age, especially with something like the DH spot. So I think there's a reason to believe it all fell off a cliff for Nelson Cruz. At some point, it will happen for everybody. But I think there's a reason to believe that Turner has maybe at least one more season of being a reliable fantasy contributor, you know, in your middle rounds.
Yeah, right. I totally agree with that.
Or he could fall off a cliff entirely. You just don't know.
That is the tough part. Once you get past 35, aging curves have shown, you know, Jeff Zimmerman's done great work on this, that, yeah, it can go in a blip. The beauty is with Justin Turner, the market never charges you too much. True. And it won't change next year. This year will not change it at all. He'll be 39. He'll still be cheap. So even if he does totally flop, it will not be a season killer. You'll adjust. You'll go pick up somebody else and say, dang, I thought it was going to keep going. But, you know, if he's healthy, Justin Turner's probably going to keep raking.
Who you got next, Eric?
I'm going to stick with my middle infielders, and it's Ha-Seong Kim.
Love it.
And I think there were a lot of reasons why I wasn't fully bought in on him in the offseason. I obviously knew the talent, you know, coming from the KBO. It hadn't fully translated. You know, he had a decent enough season last year, but it looked like maybe a guy who was a star in another league who was going to be a fine MLB player, but not a great MLB player. And then you had the signing of Xander Bogaerts, the likely return of Tatis. How were they going to, you know, move around all the different pieces? Was he going to be an everyday guy? All of those kind of question marks. And I think the first part is he forced himself onto the field, right? He proved to be so valuable that they didn't want to take him off the field. You know, his 12.5% walk rate is more similar to what he did in the KBO. Strikeout rate was never super high in the MLB, but was, you know, is under 20% now, managing the strike zone, hitting 274 this year. Again, 17 home runs. He'll probably end over 20, which isn't, you know, eye popping, but he had 30 homer power in the KBO. So you're just seeing that translate a little bit more. And then he's running like he did before coming over. There are all things like that, which maybe you just explain with comfort. As he got more comfortable, he started to play more freely. He started to play more like himself. Maybe as he got into more of an everyday role, he got more comfortable, more confident. But I look at this now and I fully buy into this more than I buy into Bryson Stott. And I understand that, you know, 274 batting average, 17 home runs, 29 stolen bases for Ha-Seong Kim is more of a fantasy-friendly profile than what you're getting for Stott. But what I mean is there's an established track record of performance with a player who took a while to adjust to a new league in a new country and is now showing that level that he had already shown previously. And so I'm more willing to buy in because I think the profile to me seems less volatile. Whereas Stott with his aggressiveness, I think I could see some ups and downs and some slumps in there. But I think that Kim has a super fantasy friendly profile. And if he was my starting shortstop next year, or second baseman next year, whatever, I'm super happy with that.
Yeah, I love Kim. The only reason he's not a huge surprise for me is I've been bought in from day one. Obviously, this performance, 17 and 29, is a surprise. The projection I gave him on the site was 14 and 16. I did tap him as a sleeper to reach 25 SBs, but again, he's even bypassed that. So Kim's been excellent. I believe in it. I'll be in next year, even at the accelerated price, because his price will jump up quite a bit. I think it's worth paying. I believe in Kim quite a bit.
And the volume helps too, to get so many at bats at the top of that Padres lineup, which, you know, they've been one of the most disappointing teams in the majors, but their core players have basically delivered from a fantasy perspective. Of course, Jake Cronenworth went down with a fractured wrist over the weekend, but he's been awful this year.
Are they even going to notice that?
Yeah, exactly. They did give him an extension before the season, which, you know, probably not. Sometimes the Padres make some weird decisions. I got to be honest.
They've made a lot of weird decisions. And I like Crony, but I don't know about I don't know about that deal.
Right. And now they gave all that money to Bogaerts, and now they're talking about moving him to first base so they can bring up Jackson Merrill. And it's like, I love Bogaerts as a player. You know, I'm a Red Sox fan, so I've been a huge fan of Xander. I believe he's a talented hitter. I don't believe he's, especially from a fantasy perspective, like, I don't believe he's a super enticing first base option.
The wrong fit for San Diego with where they'd been spending, that one made no sense to me, right? Yeah. I like the aggressiveness that they've been showing, but that one I was just like, where are you putting all these guys, man?
Right.
What are you doing? And then if you are moving him to first, like you said, Bogey doesn't have first base power. And so then once he loses shortstop eligibility in fantasy, he becomes kind of like Cronenworth when Cronenworth's a first base eligible guy. Cronenworth's been able to maintain other eligibilities, but he himself was angling toward losing some of that this year. In fact, I think, he'll maintain second. Of course, he was so bad. But yeah, scary about Bogey as far as what his prospects look like at first base. He would not be terribly fantasy relevant.
So about Kim, like the things that he does well, he makes contact, he doesn't chase. I think most importantly for Kim, he is so good defensively.
Yes.
If you look at the defensive run save leaders, Dalton Varsho is first. Fernando Tatis Jr. is second, which is like, I don't think we talk enough about. Yeah. For the transition that he's made his first season in the outfield, and he's right there among the defensive run save leaders. Pretty incredible. Ke'Bryan Hayes, and then it's Ha-Sung Kim. I mean, that defense is like you were kind of saying, Bogaerts probably isn't going to be a shortstop long term. Kim's great at, you know, second base. He could play short. He's going to be on the field. And, you know, leading off in that Padres lineup, like you said, Paul, I'm paying probably what the price is going to be next year for him. Eric was saying. More than stock, for sure.
Yeah, so definitely on that. Go ahead.
Next for me, someone I'm not necessarily paying for next year, that's Lane Thomas. And he's been great this year. I mean, just filling up every category you could want in fantasy leagues, hitting 284, 20 homers, 69 RBIs, 16 steals, 86 runs scored for a Nationals team who has like kept their heads above water. They've been very respectable, better than the sum of their parts, in my opinion. Sprint speed's excellent with Thomas. Of course, another Cardinals outfielder who got away, goes to another team and turns out to be super productive. Sorry, Cardinals fans out there. But
they still have too many outfielders, right? Like, that's the thing. They lost all these guys and they still dealt with an abundance.
You could argue they chose to keep the wrong ones, though.
Yeah. True. That part is definitely fair.
Right. But Thomas, you know, you look at the expected batting average, it's 253, has a 355 BABIP this year. Strikeout rate is 26%. But the reason I'm very skeptical here, so you look at the splits against lefties, 348 with a 990 OPS, against righties, 255 with a 724 OPS. So let's just assume, I mean, he does have good speed, but that BABIP comes down a little bit. He doesn't hit the ball that hard. I feel like maybe the price tag's not going to be super high for him next year because he's Nationals outfielder. Like, it's just not going to be that exciting. But I don't really see him duplicating this. I wonder what you think, Paul.
I'm a year early. I was a year early on Thomas, man. I wouldn't shut up about him last year. I really liked he had a nice finish to 21. He was leading off. I was like, oh, just volume this. They're going to set it and forget it atop the order in Washington. He got off to a slow start. He never really has hit righties all that well. And so they started platooning him on the short side, and it just didn't work. Flash forward this year, he's still not really hitting righties, but 726 is capable enough to keep him in the lineup every day, and he's cooking against lefties. I'm with you that, like, even though this was a guy I liked, got burned on him, and now was a year late or a year early, I'm probably not going to jump too much next year if the price really soars. It's not that I don't fully believe it, though. It's the susceptible against righty issue, right? That can really tank you. And then if you're losing playing time and you're on a short side platoon, it just really cuts your value. So I do like Thomas a bit. Again, loved him coming into 22 and was too early on him. This year, 20 and 16 is nice, but I don't think he'll go up too much, but I'm probably not going to pay it. He'll be one of those guys that might end up on a team, but I will not be seeking him, even though he panned out the way I had hoped he would have in 2022.
Yeah, I think part of his value was the fact that he was a little bit of an underrated. He's an outfielder you get to fill out your outfield, right? Mm-hmm. He's a guy you get to be your outfield four, outfield five in the draft, and you feel good about the fact that there's just a solid foundational floor here to help balance out your team. And I think if he stays kind of a depth outfielder in fantasy purposes, there's still value there because there's nobody in Washington that's, you know, chasing him out, right? Yeah. Their best outfield prospect is James Woods. He's a ways away. There's like Blake Rutherford and guys like that where who know, and Washington doesn't strike me as a team that's going to make a major splash in the offseason. So, I think you're looking at Lane Thomas likely hitting at the top. You know, he hits second now behind CJ Abrams, but hitting in the top of the Nationals lineup again. And all the things that Paul listed off as being reasons to buy in are reasons you'd want to buy in again, but not at what we're seeing currently from him. But if the consensus is what you guys are saying, where people are like, well, I'm not going to pay the premium, then I'm absolutely going to pay just for market, previous market cost for Lane Thomas, right? Maybe slightly a little bit above. There are just guys every year who everybody says, this was a fluke. And then they don't get drafted where they should because everybody's out. And I feel like Lane Thomas could sneakily be one of those guys next year on a Nationals team that may also be ready to be moving next year.
Oh, I think they could even move incrementally forward and increase the potential run Ribby output for somebody like Lane Thomas too. So I could see that.
I just mean they likely will not be an offense that people are like, I have to get pieces of X, like you do with like the Braves and the Phillies and the Blue Jays or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right. For sure. Before we move on here, just another quick word for our listeners. This Sunday will be the final one without regular season NFL football, but worry not. There's still plenty of baseball on the schedule. Look no further than MLB Sunday Leadoff exclusively on Peacock. This week, we're looking at two teams in the thick of the National League playoff race as the Phillies travel to American Family Field to face the division-leading Brewers. Brewers are on a roll right now. Catch the action live at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. Should be a fun matchup there. And Paul, you have one more surprise for someone I love a lot, actually.
Yeah, a guy that I'm sure was left for dead a bit in the fantasy realm, and that's Jorge Soler. He's back and he's cooking, and it's one of these guys that it seems like the body's cooperating. He's going to have the juice. And this is one of these guys that I think a lot of these players, we talk a lot about NFBC in the community these days as it's become more popular. And there's some of these players that are really successful at just drafting remarkably boring teams because they're going for quality production. And I think a player type like Soler ends up on these teams of some of these industry titans because they see the value in taking this guy so late, a guy who has a 48 homer season, 27 homers in 2021. Yeah, he only had 13 last year, but I think it was a little underrated that Soler was essentially league average. A 96 OPS plus is 4 points away from average, but it's not that bad. And it was only 72 games. So you start thinking about it and you're like, well, do I want to bet on health? That's really the only thing I'm betting on here. Can Jorge Soler stay healthy? Because if he can, I can get 30 homers because he's got big boy power, right? He hit the 48 in KC. You're not worried about Miami's park if you believe in the health. And I think it's a blind spot for a lot of folks to buy low on these player types because you're like, he's got bad plate skills. He's sinking. He's going to be nothing. And trusting the track record more is what helps some of these people that stick with these guys to buy them cheap because Jorge Soler was not expensive. And 35 homers later, he has been a game changer for folks that drafted him in those late rounds because, again, you were getting him for nothing. 10 and 12 teamers, reserve waiver pick. 15 teamers, late pick. So Jorge Soler has been a beast, and maybe he's just somebody that you always buy low on, right? Price will go up this next year. Maybe you lay off and look for the next Jorge Soler. If he has another down year, then you buy on the off year in 2025, right? Maybe you're always buying on the off of these guys to get the best value for somebody like a Jorge Soler.
Yeah, I'm into it. I think the big question with Soler, so he's owed $9 million next season, but he can opt out of his contract this offseason, coming off a season where he might hit 40 home runs. I don't know. I mean, he doesn't add any defensive value, and I feel like the market tends to look down on those kind of players. But still, like, just $9 million next year. I think he could probably do better than that.
It might be one of those things. Purposes, go ahead, Eric. I'm sorry.
I just to say, I think for fantasy purposes, you'd want him to opt out. The Marlins park is not great for right-handed pull power. And he, you know, neither was Kansas City when he played there, and obviously it doesn't matter for Soler. But if you get him in a nice hitter's park, I mean, think of just imagine the fantasy goodness. Imagine the home run dreams you could get from that.
Yeah, you're thinking maybe 50 at that point from somebody like Jorge Soler if he got into more of a launching pad, because he has done his best work in two of the worst hitters parks out there in KC and Miami. That is interesting. Yeah, at nine, you know, coming off 35 homers right now, and again, should get to 40 if he keeps his trajectory, you'd think he's going to eat easy opt out, but he might love Miami. I also see here it says salary may increase by up to $4 million based on plate appearances in 2023. Ooh, okay. So I don't know what that threshold is. He's at 525 right now. He's angling toward 600. I'm thinking that's probably going to eclipse it. So then you're looking at 13 mil compared to the 15 mil he made this year. He might stick, especially if he believes in where they're going. Soler might stay in Florida, which would be fine. Eric's right. It'd be better if he was in a great park. But even if he's here, his power plays everywhere. And if the price doesn't go up too crazy, I could be in. But if people start paying premium for him, he went 288 this year in the main event. If Jorge Soler's going in like the top 150, that's probably more of a layoff for me. But if he's outside that top 150, I think I'm buying the double down.
What if he signs with the Astros?
Oh, I'm so in. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Well, that's you like saw the one say- that he did in the World Series. He would be doing that once a week where he hits it out of the park.
Yeah. Yes. I was also thinking like Justin Turner has a player option in Boston too. And it's like if Justin Turner exercises that and the Red Sox just move Jorge Soler into their DH spot with the monster and left. I mean, there's a lot of scenarios for Soler where you could see a real power boon, which is crazy to say for somebody that's hitting 40 home runs. But, you know,
I agree.
I'm going to switch it up and I'm going to go with a pitcher. Mm-hmm. And it's Alexis Diaz. And there are a couple reasons why he caught me by surprise. One of which was just, he currently has 34 saves.
Means baseball.
I think that we thought that he would be solid, but I don't know that anybody would have said he'd be the best closer in baseball or one of the best closers in baseball. Mm-hmm. 34 saves, 2.22 ERA, only two blown saves. He's got a 21.6% strikeout minus walk ratio, you know, is just a two pitch guy, but again, he's a closer, so it doesn't matter. The slider is filthy, 22.6% swing strike rate on the slider alone, 34.4% CSW. I think the reason why it caught me by surprise is that we had such a long track record of David Bell not trusting one closer. And saying that he wanted to have a guy and then not. And part of that was, you know, players not performing, right? Lucas Sims was going to be the guy and it didn't work out for the Reds. And so I got into my head that they wouldn't necessarily just go with one guy. And I think also there's now, but I look to next year and I just like, there were some 2024 drafts DJ and I were talking about before where Alexis Diaz was being drafted before Edwin Diaz. And I'm kind of like, I don't know what level we're pushing Alexis Diaz now where he is. I think he's a very good closer. I don't know that I buy him in that elite tier at the top. I think like if you look at there's some regression on blown saves, you know, I don't think you want to just assume he's going to blow more saves. But like the other guys with 34 saves, Class A has 9 blown saves. Doval has 7 blown saves. Felix Bautista has 33 saves. He has 6 blown saves, right? These are guys who are elite closers who are still blowing 3 times as many saves as Alexis Diaz. Like it's going to happen eventually. And I just think like, you know, the low 2s ERA might go up a little bit. I think this is a really strong closer, but I'm just pumping the brakes a little bit on putting him in the tier next year of guys like, you know, I still would put Edwin Diaz back in there, especially if he gets an inning or two in September, like they're talking about, where we might be able to see that he's kind of like slowly working his way back. I'm not ready to lump Alexis Diaz in with that tier of like those top guys.
I think that's fair. I totally understand having some caution with Alexis Diaz. I do like him. I'm maybe a bit more in than you, but like as far as going above big bro Edwin, I think if I get the green light on Edwin as far as the health, then I am still going to take Edwin over Alexis. But, you know, I do like Alexis Diaz. And one thing I really like is he doesn't give up homers. And that's probably the biggest fear I would have of somebody in that park in Cincinnati. Sure. So that certainly helps. And that's the quickest way to lose a closer's role, too. You give up those homers. That's the quickest game changer to the negative that you can have. So I think there is some viability here. But if they start pushing him up, I'll tell you what, if he gets pushed up the way Bautista did this year, I'll be out. I believed fully in Bautista, so I was buying all the way in what people were pushing him up to this year. If Diaz gets the same treatment, I'll probably pull back. I'm not quite as confident there, but I do like Diaz. So it really depends on that price there is what I'm getting to.
If Bautista doesn't have surgery in the offseason, if it's an injury that they deem does not require surgery, who do you think you'd be more in on between him and Alexis Diaz?
Oh, that's so close. That's a Diaz great question. Diaz for me. Yeah, I think it's Diaz for me too.
Actually. UCL is just like, I mean, it could be one of those things that like it could be spring training and like he thought he was going to be ready and then all of a sudden he needs Tommy John surgery. Like sometimes that's just how that goes. So that's far too risky for me. If you remember Bautista, when spring camp first opened, he was kind of questionable for the start of the season. I think he was on a shoulder strengthening program due to like an off-season injury. And there was some question briefly, I'd say for a couple of weeks, that he was going to be ready for the season. In fact, I remember dropping Bautista, my own personal rankings, like number 10 among closers in like early March, which any drafts I had during that time did not go well. I can only hope that Bautista is ready, you know, ready to go next year. But I do think with like an Edwin Diaz, like, I'd be very surprised if he pitches in September, to be honest with you. But
yeah, especially with them sucking.
Yeah, I don't think there's any real reason for it except maybe just some peace of mind. I think all that's likely to happen with Edwin Diaz in September is to throw some live BP, and like that's enough, I think, for him to go into the offseason feeling good. But if he makes a couple of appearances in the spring and looks like himself, like there's maybe only like one or two closures I would take over him. I mean, I don't think where he's being drafted is really going to change.
I tend to agree with that on Edwin. That's why Edwin over Alexis for me, but then Alexis Diaz over Felix Bautista.
Yep.
Almost certainly. Yeah. I think I'm pretty firm there along with DJ.
What if Yennier Cano is the kind of unquestioned closer for the Orioles going into next year? Does he have that top 10 kind of
more arrow top going 15 up for him? For me, yep. It'd be more top 15 unless we see more swing and miss. I do want to see some more whiffs there before I would really push Yennier Cano quite that high. It would be exciting because I believe in Baltimore opening a window right now where they're going to continue to be good, but I wouldn't quite get him into that top 10 range unless we saw a lot more swing and miss during this stretch run.
I might put him into the top 10 because I look at like Ryan Pressly is firmly in the top 10, and he's around a 9.8 strikeout per nine guy. But you put him in the top 10 because he closes for the Astros. Going into next year, could you look at the Orioles in a similar way as like they are the best, if not one of the best teams in the AL? You've got a closer with elite ratios who's not going to miss, you know, a ton of bats, but will strike out around a batter an inning a little more than a batter an inning. Like I could see Cano in that like 8, 9, 10 range of closures at the end.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
So my last surprise here is an Oriole. It's Kyle Bradish. Just a breakout season where he's, you know, we've said for the past 2 years, like the Orioles need a starting pitcher. They need a frontline starting pitcher. But I mean, here he is. And there was the hype for Bradish in the spring, even coming off a year where last year was kind of hit or miss, had a 4.90 ERA as a rookie. Switched up his pitch mix in the spring. The four-seamer last year got pounded, so he's really switched up that pitch mix this year, throwing the sinker and the curveball more often, his slider, his best out pitch for sure. 3.03 ERA right now. I believe it's the second lowest among qualified starters in the American League through 24 starts, just about a strikeout per inning with very good control. Also keeping the ball in the ballpark, 12 home runs. And granted, a more pitcher-friendly ballpark, but last year he gave up 17 in 117 and two-thirds innings this year. For me, he's checking all the boxes in terms of someone that I don't think he's going to be like a top 20 fantasy starting pitcher next year, but that's okay. Like I'd take him as like my number 2-3 starting pitcher in a mixed league.
Absolutely. I was super bought in on Bradish this year. So I'm going to be doubling down there. Love everything I've seen from him. Just been a big fan. I was part of the hype train coming into the year. That was definitely one of the ones that hit. So yeah, I'm right there and I'm not leaning off of Bradish at all.
Agreed. He was one of my late round guys everywhere. And then he took that liner off the foot in like his first start or second start. I forget which one it was. And he was like immediately on the IL and you were like, oh, here, whatever. Like, here we go. And a lot of people I knew in you know, NFBC format type of leagues moved on because he was a flyer, right? You didn't know what you were going to get from him. You thought he would break out, but then he gets an early season injury and all of a sudden you're like, all right, we'll go somewhere else. And he's been tremendous.
100%. I've loved him. I stayed bought in. It's one of those things where it's like, if he wasn't really your guy, you might have cut and said, eh, I don't care. But if he was your guy, you were inclined to keep. At least that's how I felt, because I never considered cutting him. I wanted to see this through and actually get some time with Bradish to determine where he was going to be this year, even after that foot injury, which did scare me.
So this is great. I feel like this is a great group of surprises from this year. And you know, it's one thing to just talk about guys and like what they've done and how valuable they've been, but to put it in the context of how to think about next year, like that's what, and, you know, obviously we want to finish strong here this season, but we're already thinking about next year too. And I think that's an important part of the process. So, but to get people over the finish line this season, let's talk about a few waiver wire guys to close the show here, because there are still some interesting names who are widely available who can help people the rest of the way. We have Brian Wu coming back, Javier Assad in the Cubs rotation, Seth Lugo still widely available, Cole Reagans with the Rangers as well. So kind of looking at names like this, Paul, who would be at the top of your list among the names I just mentioned?
It's Reagans for me. Really big Reagans fan. And actually, if I could toot my own horn a little bit, since I took my fat L on Adelis Garcia, I'll turn around and say one of the Rangers I did like when he was a Ranger was Cole Reagans. I actually had him on my breakout starter list as like a deep flyer. Keep tabs on him, figure out, you know, if he's going to be in the rotation. It never worked out in Texas, so people probably weren't adding him. But once he got the opportunity and started flashing the quality skills, Reagans was somebody I was buying instantly. The week he came up in main event, unfortunately, I bought Silseth and I had Silseth 1, Reagans 2, because I'm wins chasing, so I was going for the ostensibly better team. Silseth's been fine, don't get me wrong, but I wish I had Reagans as well. Two-time TJ guy. So last year he's thrown 92, 93, probably didn't really give people an idea of who Cole Reagans is. He's a 96-plus type guy. We started to see that in spring this year. That's why I really bought in. And then we've really seen him come together here in KC. I believe in Reagans both the rest of this year and into next year. He's definitely one of my guys that I'm fully in on.
Yeah, I side with Paul there. I really like Brian Wu for this week because it's a good two-start week. And I like Brian Wu in general, but you know they're going to limit the innings a little bit. But I think what Reagans is doing is great. I wrote about him after the first start in Kansas City, and then they demoted him. And so I was a little tepid on bids because it looked like a great start, but then he went down to AAA, wasn't really sure when he was going to get called back up. And so I missed out in a decent number of leagues, which is a disappointment for me. And I think just another example that, you know, you got to trust your gut when you see something. But I also think that Seth Lugo is somebody who deserves to be rostered in a lot more leagues. He had a real terrible start on August 7th against the Dodgers, but he has been just filthy in about 40-plus innings since then. He's throwing two different versions of the breaking ball now. And so I think that Lugo, who was always a pretty good reliever for the Mets, has proven that he can he can make it as a starter on a good, still the Padres are a good team. I know they disappointed, but there's a good chance for wins on that team. So I'd be going after Lugo in some deep leagues as well.
Paul, really, what do you think of Jordan Wicks, who came up with the Cubs and over the weekend and looked really good? I don't know how much of an opportunity he's going to get moving forward here. So maybe trickier case, but you think he's like the real deal as far as a prospect? Of course, Kyle Harrison's up with the Giants too. Kind of like pitch you know, innings limit kind Wicks. Of stuff going on there? Yeah. Okay.
I will say I prefer Wicks to Harrison. Yeah. Harrison right now, I like him as a long-term guy, but his command and control just are non-existent pretty much. And it's going to create a volatility that I just don't want as much at this point of the year. Yeah. That volatility does mean that the upside could be there, but I just don't really see that coming through for Harrison right now. You know, you see what a 40 grade command can look like with somebody like Dylan Cease at its low end. Harrison might be a 30, 35 grade command right now, but he has nasty stuff. So I like him long term. Wicks is more of a lower ceiling, but higher floor type guy. He might not give you that potential to really shoot the moon, but can be solid. Had a great debut at Pittsburgh. Does go to Cincinnati this week, so it's a challenge. But there weren't many waiver pickups this week for starters.
There weren't.
12s, no. 15s, maybe even 10s. So Jordan Wicks was on the radar big time. And if you're taking him into Cincy, Godspeed, because they can still get you, but I do like him as at least a team streamer. So if I'm not using Wicks, I'm just reserving him right now, and I want to see what's going on as opposed to cutting him back into the pool. So I do like Wicks. The upside I don't think is massive, but I think it's enough to roster him. He's on a good team too, so if you're wins chasing, you can back, you know, the Cubs have his back.
Josh Rojas has been on fire, and it for the Mariners, who now have sole possession of first place in the American League West, despite trading their closer, Paul Sewald, to the Diamondbacks at the deadline. One player they got back, Josh Rojas, who's been great, second base, third base eligible, available in 65% of Yahoo leagues. I feel like he needs to be rostered wherever he's available. Jared Kelnick, set to begin a rehab assignment. He's rostered in about 56% of Yahoo leagues. Of course, that was a really unfortunate incident where he fractured his foot in frustration in the dugout there with the Mariners. So we'll see him back soon. Michael Brantley is actually, believe it or not, close to coming back to join the Astros.
I know. That's what they said 2 months ago. And then
I know, I know.
Two more months.
But he's available everywhere. And I could see him come up and just like hit 300 for the month of September. I mean, I think Brantley, if he's out there, I wouldn't count on him. But he's someone I would probably
taking a shot. Yeah, I think so too with Brantley, just because, I mean, he's not fully Justin Turner, but it's in that sort of vibe of like, you know, if he's healthy, he's good. He's just never healthy. Even Turner's like a bastion of health by comparison there, outside of those back-to-back 140-plus game years that we saw from Brantley somewhat recently, but it was 64 last year, but a 288 with five homers. So, yeah, I like going for Brantley on a spec, especially if you need batting average. Justin Mason and I talk about this a lot. Do not give up on your rate stats. Again, always shouts to Todd Zola. He was the first one that I saw, at least in the industry, put a big spotlight on that people give up on their ratios way too early, because they're the only categories where people can come back to you. Nobody's losing homers or steals. You always have to gain. The ratios can move down towards you too. So that's why you can't give up on those. And a big like 320 average from Brantley from here on out would surprise nobody. And it is certainly on the table.
In deep leagues too, I would just throw out Davis Schneider's name again. Matt Chapman left their last game with right middle finger inflammation. Don't know if that's going
to... Eric, I'm sorry. I interrupted you, but I wanted to point out, and he's been god awful. Have you guys looked at the breakdown of Chapman? He is one of these guys that you really need to be aware of the anchoring effects of a big April. He went 11.52 in that month, then 5.85, 6.33, bounced back in July with a 9.08, but then back to 5.32 here in August. It's two great months and three terrible ones for Chapman. Throw in the finger injury, and Davis Snyder is a good call out there in deep leagues, Eric. So sorry to interrupt you there, but I just want to point out that Chapman has really struggled.
And you had to support your, you know, your fellow mustache guy.
Exactly.
You guys stick together. You know what I mean? So I get it. But this could be one of those good times where they're like, you know what? Like, take 10 days. We'll put you on the IL for Chapman. Let him figure it out. But also they on Sunday, they played Davis Schneider in left field. I think they're starting to realize like they need to get his bat in the lineup a little bit. And even if he's not a full-time starter, but he's a 4 days a week guy in deep leagues, he's not a fluke. Like, he's not a 400 hitter, obviously, like he's done in this early season. But he's not a flash in the pan, right? He is a 24-year-old, who had good numbers in the minor leagues, who I think can be a solid major league hitter. It'll regress a little bit from where he's at, but he can put up good numbers.
Yep, I fully agree.
Paul, thanks again for coming on the show. This has been a great conversation. Anything you want to plug before you go?
Yeah, hit me up on Twitter or whatever it's being called today, at Spore. on Twitch, twitch.tv/Spore. I do a box score show 3-4 times a week there in the morning, and I stream video games at night, usually Out of the Park Baseball, which is a baseball simulator. Of course, over at Fangraphs, you can go fangraphs.com and find it that way, or directly to the page, fantasy.fangraphs.com. But thank you guys so much for having me on. It was great talking with both of y'all.
Awesome. Awesome. Remember to subscribe to Circling the Bases wherever you get your podcasts. You can actually find all your favorite NBC Sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports. Do yourself a favor, check out the RotoWorld football show. We are in the thick of fantasy football draft season right now, so get everything you need over there, including from Eric, who is contributing some fantasy football content now. Your defensive specialist, right, Eric?
Yeah, that's sure. I pick up the stuff that nobody wants, but yeah, 3 years of 3 years of covering like exclusively defenses is somehow a niche that I found myself in. But I like it. I like doing
all you need. Sometimes you just need that niche in the fantasy community for sure.
Defense and catchers. I just kind of like promote the things that other people are like, eh, really?
Yeah. very good. Very good stuff. Be sure to check that out in the draft guide. Also, follow us on Twitter or X, like Paul was saying. If you don't already, I'm at DJ Short. Eric is at Samsky NYC. Take care, everyone. We will see you next time.